Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me is my fearless co-pilot. He's been on the show millions of times. We haven't had millions of episodes, but if we have, he'd be on all of them. His name is Garrett Thornton. He is a man of OSN. He's also on KGW, Northwest Sports, or sorry, NBC Sports Northwest, previously known as Comcast Sports Northwest. He's all over the place. He's on every site that matters, and we're so happy he's here on this show. Garrett, how the hell are you tonight?
Good. How you doing, Casey? It's been a little bit.
It has, and it's been a little bit for this show. In the grand scheme, probably not saving lives, but if we are, you owe us, and you more so owe Garrett, because he's the guest on this show, but we couldn't do it without him. So thanks for being on, Garrett. It's been a long time. The draft came and went without us. The NBA first round came without us, and I feel like a lot of bad things happened, but some good things, I guess, hopefully.
Yeah, it's crazy because the last time you and I talked, it was before the playoffs started, and right. We talked about how good of a matchup New Orleans was going to be for Portland.
We were different
and then
people
Portland
then.
Portland gets swept, and now we're like, oh, is CJ McCollum getting traded this offseason? Is Olshay going to blow it up? We're in a whole different spot than when we were a month ago or whenever the last time you and I recorded an episode together. So
how
the world has changed in a month. It's crazy.
Since we didn't get to do a follow-up show, let's recap. We thought that was going to be a good matchup. How do you feel about it now that the Blazers are, hold on, let me check the stats, defeated 4-0? Do we change our, you know, do we vote no on this matchup, or do we let them ride? I don't know how I feel about it. What do you think?
Well, I've had a lot of people ask me about that matchup and that series, because I was very open about the fact that I thought it was a good matchup.
Looks
the
great
only
on paper.
The only matchup in the playoffs that I thought was going to be better for the Blazers would have been Oklahoma City.
Personally, but I thought Phoenix would have been better, but, you know, if you have to go with an actual
Phoenix
playoff
would have been
team.
A good choice. No, but I just really thought that assessment of the Pelicans going into the playoffs was that they had a top five player in the world in Anthony Davis, and then they had some other nice players, but nobody that really stood out.
Right.
And in that series, we saw how wrong that was. Jrue Holiday played like an all-star. Rajon Rondo played like the Rajon Rondo of 2008,
2010, yeah.
Yeah. And Nikola Mirotic made the Blazers incredibly depressed that they didn't trade for him at the trade deadline.
Right.
And so it was just the Pelicans played the series of their lives. The Blazers came into the series exhausted from pushing, trying to get that third seed. And I think it was the perfect storm against the Blazers. And it obviously didn't turn out well for the franchise and for the team. And so I think that as fans, and I'm the first to admit that I cover the Blazers and whatever, but I'm a fan. Like, I've watched Blazer games since the day I was born, and I will continue to watch them, whether they win 10 games a year or 60 games a year. I'm going to watch the Blazers. And as fans, we find ways to excuse their performances. And so all offseason, we're going to say, what happened in that series? Oh, they were tired. But at the same time, you're paying Damian Lillard $25 million a year. You're paying CJ McCollum about the same. These are guys that get paid to perform, and they didn't perform in that series. We can talk about Jrue Holiday's defense and Rajon Rondo's defense, but let's just rewind a few years back when the Blazers beat the Rockets in the first round. The defense by Patrick Beverley and some of those other wings on that Rockets team was just as suffocating on Dame and CJ, but they found a way to overcome that. And in this series, they just didn't find a way to overcome it. I'm wondering if Damian wasn't 100% health-wise in that series. And that game against Utah, the 82nd game of the year, he took that hard fall on his hip. But that's just another excuse that we could say for the Blazers. But they just got outperformed, outcoached, outplayed. It was an ugly series, but now they got to face the reality of going into next season and who's going to be on the team? Are they going to re-sign Yusuf Nurkic, Ed Davis, Shabazz Napier? What do they do in the draft? There's a ton of question marks moving forward.
Yeah, and I think we all kind of overreacted after the series was over, thinking like, oh my God, what just happened? This was supposed to be, if not an easy series, at least a competitive series, and it was neither. Well, it was easy for one side, but not the one we were expecting. And now that we're a little bit removed from it, I think that people are starting to calm down and saying maybe you don't need to blow up the roster, maybe you don't need to trade everybody, maybe you don't need to, you know, think about signing Nurkic. You should probably re-sign him and keep this core intact and add to it. But shoot, it's just after that series happened, I think everybody was in such shock. They're like, you know what, blow it all up. I don't ever want to see that team on the court again. And I think now that we're a little farther removed from that, people are thinking, well, you know, you could add to it, maybe subtract a player or two, but don't take away anybody meaningful. And then we'll look at next season as a new season and we'll just write this one off.
Well, and let's rewind a year. Maybe not a year. Last summer, when all the movement happened in the Western Conference, when Jimmy Butler went to Minnesota, when the draft happened, people in Portland would have been happy with an 8th seed.
Right.
We were talking about how difficult the Western Conference was, which was completely warranted. The Western Conference this season was most likely the most talented and stacked conference in basketball history. Like, from the top to the bottom, they're not the bottom because Mavericks and Suns and Kings, they were not good.
Right.
But, I mean, the Lakers were better this year than we expected them to be, and they could have legitimately pushed for a playoff spot had they started the season better. And so there were 12 teams in the Western Conference that would have easily been playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. So the Blazers went through that gauntlet of a schedule, 82 games. They almost got to the 50 wins benchmark that is just this arbitrary benchmark that people say is a successful season. They got to 49 wins, which is more wins than the year before, and they got the third seed and home court advantage in the first round. If you would have told that to 100 Blazer fans last summer, 99 of them would have been excited about that season. And so now we're sitting here and we're like, oh, the world's ending, but right. It's still the same team. They have everybody of note under contract next year except Yusuf Nurkic and Ed Davis. They have the 24th pick in the draft. They're going to be aggressive. Neil Shea talked today at the NBA Combine, and he said, we're adjusting our game plan. We're going after guys that are going to help us in the playoffs. Good. He said, the last few years we've been rebuilding and we've been trying to find young guys that can develop in our system. Now we're looking for guys that'll help us in the playoffs because we are a playoff team. And I think that added Neil Shea is the biggest salesman out there. And I'm not going to – you have to take things that he says with kind of a grain of salt because he can make an ugly situation sound great. That's just who he is. He's Hollywood. He's flashy. That's what he does, and that's how he gets these GM jobs. But when you look at his success in the draft, in drafting Damian Lillard, in drafting CJ McCollum, in drafting Zach Collins, who looks promising moving forward. With the 24th pick in the draft, it's not a premier pick, but you're going to find somebody that's going to help you. And I'm not saying that they're going to pick with 24. I think that could be moved big, always talking about career arc, how he wants guys on this team with the same career arc as Damian and CJ. If they move the first round pick for a guy that's in that same 4 to 6 years in the league like Damian and CJ, because today he also said that they've been too conservative with their roster building. They've been too conservative with their picks. They've been too conservative with their trades at the trade deadline, and that they're really looking to move forward as a playoff team. And so as a fan, as somebody that lives in Portland, I think that's something you can take a little bit of solace in after such a crappy ending of the season is moving forward as a playoff team and not as a rebuilding team, which is, I think, the mode that they've been in the last few years.
And I hope that there's more truth to that than not, because He's definitely made some aggressive moves the last couple of years. They haven't necessarily panned out. So I don't know that it's aggressive that they need to take a Tanner up a notch. But and he's definitely had some solid draft picks. And every GM has about this, you know, it's probably a 50-50, 60-40 shake as far as successful draft picks versus not successful. So it's hard to throw in his face that every time he does a Damian Lillard, he's got a Myers Leonard or vice versa. And he's got some good free agent pickups, and he's got some that he hasn't really hit on. And every GM has that. I mean, your job is to take shots and see what sticks. But I just hope he somehow figures out how to make Portland a destination for guys that want to win. Because guys that have been in the league for 4 to 6 years probably don't see Portland as a destination unless there's someone who knows they're not going to start where they are now or where they're going, and Portland will give them that shot. Or if they're a veteran looking to pick up minutes and train some youngsters, this has typically been a haven for guys like that. We don't need any more guys like that, though. We need guys that can come in their prime and help this team get over the hump and make a deep playoff run. Because as much as I love to hang my hat on a 50-win season, I need to see some postseason success. That's what makes the season worth it, because we loved watching 82 games and they were really entertaining. But when we're sitting at home watching the Warriors, Rockets, Cavaliers, and Celtics, and the Portland didn't even have a shot, it kind of stinks. And I'll look forward to next season, and I'm a fan too, but I need to see some more aggressive behavior, I guess, where if we need to trade away a pick for a couple of years and get some marquee players in here, maybe that's what it takes, you know. I would have loved to see them get Paul George even for a year or Carmelo, but it didn't happen. And we'll see what they do next year. But I really want to see them really own that statement that if they're going to say they're going to be more aggressive, I need to see some signings that really matter in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and Portland's never going to be a destination for the NBA. It doesn't have the nightlife. The weather's not ideal during the season. But Portland can be a destination in the fact that, hey, look at what we've done. Look how many years we've been to the playoffs in a row. Look at, we've got Damian and CJ, and we're developing Yusuf Nurkic and some young big guys, and come be a part of this. And I think my problem with the NBA is, legitimately, how many teams can you see winning the NBA championship in 2019? As we sit right now, 3 or 4.
Right.
Like, and so what are all the other teams playing for? Are you playing for a chance at the Western Conference Finals? Are you playing for a chance in a couple? And so that's the thing. There's just not a ton of parity in the NBA right now, because the Warriors, Rockets, Cavaliers, and Celtics look like they're going to own the next few years in the NBA. You've got like a Philadelphia team that could jump in that mix in the Eastern Conference. You've got a team like the Blazers or the Timberwolves in the Western Conference that could jump in that mix. But as it stands right now, there's not a ton of parity. There's only a few teams that you could see winning it. So we're seeing those four teams in the Western and Eastern Conference Finals right now. And if you fast-forwarded a year and you told me that those four teams weren't in again next year, I would not be shocked whatsoever. And so as a fan, I think you need to recalibrate some as well. But, I mean, we always want our teams to win the championship. That's what you grow up as a kid pretending in the backyard, and that's what you play video games for. At some point, the NBA will be parity once the dynasties are broken up and once LeBron James isn't the best player on the planet. But right now, it's just tough to see many routes to the finals, a miraculous signing or a draft pick that really breaks out in those first couple seasons. So not to be the downer of the conversation, but I just... Neil Shea says that they're going to be aggressive, but it doesn't matter how aggressive they are. I don't know that this is a team that will be in the finals the next couple of years just because of the strength of the other teams in the Western Conference.
No, and in the finals, I think, is a pipe dream, but getting to the second round and the third round, I think that's where most people would grade this team as an A+ if they could do that. just getting out of the first round consistently, I'll aim for that. And if you can get to the conference finals, outstanding. The finals at that point, it's just awesome. I just want to see a team that's competing for the title on a year-to-year basis. And I think right now we're competing for to be in contention in the West and not necessarily contention in the NBA. And that's where I want to make sure we're drawing that line in the sand.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that I think it's possible. I just, in the NBA, an 82-game season, you never know what's going to happen with injuries. Steph Curry showed that he's not invincible and that those ankles still aren't pulled up long-term. Weirder things and crazier things happen, and overall, right, this Blazer team's pretty durable. So I think that anything's possible, but I do think that they're a piece or two away from level.
Well, before we get over to discussing the conference finals, and we'll stop bringing up the Portland's not there. Any other sports you want to talk about tonight? Anything happening in the world of baseball, for example?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking before the show that not a whole lot of news from the Northwest, and really the only big Northwest is Robinson Cano's suspension, banned substance, and it came out yesterday morning, I believe. And so the story goes, and there's been a few developments, so the story goes that he took a substance, a diuretic, that was given to him by a doctor in the Dominican Republic. He took it. Supposedly, the results came back before the season, but it's just coming out now. And so, basically, they say that this substance can be used as a masking agent for things that you're taking drugs, because this diuretic is an enhancing drug in itself, but it could have masked other drugs. And so, he lost, and so now he's out for 80 games. So that's half the season. Or the team that's on a 15 or 16 year playoff drought, and Robinson Cano is a player that they need to get back to the playoffs. And even if they do get to the playoffs, the suspension is 80 games, then he'll come back, but he's ineligible for the playoffs. So it's a terrible blow for the Mariners, a team that's off to a decent start this year. But it's also a blow to Robinson Cano and his Hall of Fame chances, because we've seen how voters treat people that are even under any kind of suspicion for PEDs. And so Robinson Cano, who's one of the most skilled second basemen to ever play the game and one of the most skilled players to ever wear a Mariners uniform, now will possibly miss out on the Hall of Fame because of this incident. And so it's unfortunate for Mariners fans. It's unfortunate for the organization, but we all know that baseball isn't clean. And so you're going to see this continue. Major players are going to get hit with these 80 game bans. And it's tough as a fan to miss out on these players for, that's the MLB's way of saying, taking these things seriously, where the NFL, you miss four games, it's only a quarter of the season. 80 games is half the season. And so
crazy to hear that number out loud. 80 is half.
That's an entire NBA season. And yeah. But yeah, Robinson Cano, this is his third, tonight's the third game he's missing. And he's got 77 more games, so he'll miss half the summer of baseball. And It's crazy, but it's part of the game, and I think you're going to continue to see it across the league. It's just, it's got someone here in the Northwest, and so talking about it.
Well, and it kind of, it stinks just because he's gone, but also stinks because you talked about the Mariners being subject to a really brutal playoff drought. Which is weird, because you think back to the 90s, and they were in the ALDS or ALCS every year, it seemed like, and now they can barely make the playoffs, if at all. And now their best player, arguably one of the best players in the game, is taken away for half the season, which not only robs Seattle, but it robs everybody else as well. And now that team probably has even less of a chance of making the playoffs this year than it did earlier. I mean, the pennant race is going to be in full swing by the time he gets back, and if Seattle doesn't have a winning record or close by the time he comes back, it might be too late.
Yeah, and that's coming into the season. Everyone talked about the Mariners and their only chance of making the playoffs is staying healthy, and they've got to keep Felix Hernandez and James Paxton healthy, and so far they've stayed healthy for the most part. There's been little injuries, but about an 80-game suspension in that mix, and so it really is a Mariners and a major blow to the breaking that playoff drought.
Well, we'll hope that they somehow rally in his absence, and when he gets back, they've got a shot, because that'd be really neat to have him come back and have them maybe rally to get the wild card or something. But I guess we'll wait about three and a half months and see how they're doing. So before we move on to conference finals talk, you and I didn't get a chance to talk on the live, on the air after the draft. How do you think Dallas did, and what are your thoughts going into 2018, 2019?
Man, don't get me started on the NFL draft. I could go the whole rest of the I could do a few hours on the NFL draft.
Multiple shows.
Yeah. But real quick on Dallas, I think they did a good job. They filled all of their major needs other than their need at safety. But I'm also still thinking that the Cowboys are going to make a run at Earl Thomas before it's all said and done, because he's not happy without a contract in Seattle. He hasn't showed up to any of their offseason stuff. And so if Earl Thomas is wearing a Cowboy uniform by the end of the summer, just...
I don't like that at all.
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense for both teams. The Seahawks are in one of the toughest... They're in a tough division. Lost a ton of their pieces. I think the Seahawks are a rebuilding team right now, as much as the Northwest doesn't like to hear that, and as much as it's tough to rebuild when you have a franchise quarterback, like how do you go to Russell Wilson and tell him, hey, we're rebuilding? But when you look at what the Seahawks have done this offseason, it looks like a rebuild.
Right.
Their coaching staff's all turned over, their defense is all turned over. It's a completely different team. Cliff Averill's done, Michael Bennett got traded. Who knows about Cam Chancellor at this point? They've
Richard
got
Sherman's gone. He got cut.
Richard Sherman's in the division. Like anyways, back to their first round pick. They took Leighton Vander Esch out of Boise State. And it's not a sexy pick at all. It's a linebacker. A guy that played in the Mountain West that plays linebacker. It's not going to get a ton of fans excited, but that's exactly what they needed. That was their biggest weakness on their roster, was at linebacker. And so linebacker on the board at 19, so I think it's a no-brainer to take him. My only Derwin James, the Florida State safety, was still available at 17. He went to the Chargers, and most people had him as a top 10 player in the draft. He's pretty raw. He's not necessarily your starter, but he's so athletic and he's so rangy. He can play so many different positions in your secondary. I would have loved for the Cowboys to move up to 16 or 17 to pick up Derwin James, but just wasn't in the cards. I think the Cowboys are really happy with Vander Esch. He's the guy that the Cowboys tend to draft. He was a team of one of those bowl. The right kinds is looking for. But then they moved on the second round. They ended up with Connor Williams out of Texas, who a lot of people thought was going to be a first-round draft pick. James will slide in at their left guard spot and start day one. And that Cowboy offensive line is going to be pretty impressive. So,
and you get Zeke back well for the whole draft season now.
Yeah, Zeke's back the whole season. Hopefully Tyron Smith is healthy going into the season. They cut Dez Bryant, but that receiving core, there's a lot of dudes. There's a lot of numbers in that receiving room, but I think that they have a guy. Everyone says, how are they going to replace Dez? Well, to replace Dez's production from last year isn't tough. But to replace Dez Bryant, the guy that always has the best corner on the field on him.
Right.
I don't know that that's you're not going to replace him with anybody that you have in the receiving room right now. I don't know that you necessarily need to. You have the best offensive line in the game of football. You've got one of the best running backs in the game of football. I think you're going to see the Cowboys kind of turn into a college type offense where receivers, they're going to have a ton of sets. They're going to run a lot of slot stuff. You're going to see them run the ball a lot. They're going to get Dak Prescott out in space and out of the pocket. And I think it's going to change a little bit of who they are as an offense, not having Dez Bryant and not having Jason Witten on the field. But overall, I think the draft went well for the Cowboys. It was an exciting draft for the whole league. I think it happened. I mean, the Seahawks picked up Shaquem Griffin, which is one of the cooler stories
that you've seen
in the NFL in a long time. And so that some of those, there were so many of those stories over the draft weekend. And so I think the NFL once again is just completely dominating their offseason. There's not many days that go by where there's not headlines in the NFL. And today was another Reuben Foster's ex-girlfriend that accused him of domestic violence a while ago. She came out today and has said that it was all false. She was just after his money. She was trying to ruin his career. But like the NFL, once again, we're sitting here May 17th and they're dominating the headlines. Like, can do that. The NFL is king at doing that. Now pretty soon we'll get into training camps, and before we know it, it'll be preseason and heading into the season. So excited for football. I think that it's right around the corner and looking forward to it.
Here's a quick slant for you before we go to the conference finals. Why hasn't Seattle gone after DeMarco Murray yet? He's out there. He's a free agent. He's a running back. He needs a team.
Well,
what's the problem?
My question is, why did Seattle draft a third-round running back in the first round?
Everyone wants to know that one.
So,
I think even the kid himself wants to know how he ended up there.
I tell my wife all the time, don't answer a question with a question. And that's what I did. You just asked me a question, I answer with a question. But you brought up Seattle running backs.
Yeah.
I don't get the draft pick. I realized that he was super productive at San Diego State, but that's super productive against that competition. It's like the Cowboys drafted Michael Gallup in the third round. Michael Gallup was super productive. I think he had like 1,700 yards one year, 17 touchdowns his junior year at Colorado State. Like, just stupid numbers, but it's at Colorado State, and he went in the third round. Rashard Penny does the same thing at San Diego State and went in the first round. Like, I don't get it. Darius Geis was on the
board. I was just going to say, you got guys from LSU, from Georgia that are there, proven.
Ronald Jones was on the board from USC.
They had options. They were
legitimate three-down running backs.
They could have traded out of the pick and gotten any of those guys in the second round.
So I don't get it. I don't get what they're – I don't understand fully what they're doing in Seattle. Rebuild. A lot of people in Seattle don't think that they are. There's a lot of strange optimism in their defense right now, which I realize they have Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. They still have some pieces. The Super Bowl roster from just 3 years ago.
It's gone.
It's completely gone. They've got Doug Baldwin and some of the guys still, but they have let a lot of guys walk out that door this summer. So I'm curious of what they're going to do. I wouldn't be shocked if they're a 4-win team next year, but I honestly wouldn't be shocked if they're a 12-win team next year. The Seahawks are one of the strange stories
for a reason.
Yeah, and I've never held back on saying that I'm not a huge fan of the Seahawks. I've lived in the Northwest my whole life, and every single Sunday the Seahawks are on TV. and despise them for that fact. But the thing is, because of that, I've seen a ton of Seahawk coverage. I've talked to a lot of Seahawk fans, and Seahawk fans are irrationally, like, they love what they did in the draft. Somehow, some way, they find a way to love what they did in the draft. Find a way to say that they're going to win 12 or 13 games this year. And I'll believe it when I see it, but right. I wish that I had that kind of optimism all the time about the teams that I root for.
I don't think that pick's going to be why they win those 12 games, but they still could win the 12 games.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I do think that they could win 12 games. I'm a franchise quarterback. How many other teams in the league can say that they have a franchise quarterback that they can depend on? Like six? The Seahawks depend on Russell Wilson.
Maybe six?
Many. I mean, you've got Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. You've got
Drew Brees, Roethlisberger.
I'd throw Drew Brees, Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan. I'd throw in that mix.
It's kind of nothing after that.
I mean, and then it. the next tier is like the Deshaun Watson, who people are really high on.
You've got Deshaun Watson. You've got Cam Newton. You've got, I don't know, Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, Andrew Luck. I mean, he's healthy.
After last year, I'd throw Jared Goff into that next tier.
I mean, maybe Carson Wentz. I guess I need to see a full two seasons.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's too much to ask.
But Russell Wilson is legitimately in that top tier.
Right.
And you're rolling Russell Wilson out there with a first-round running back from San Diego State, a defense that's patchworked together, and I don't know. I don't get the direction, but I guess we'll see.
Well, that's if the San Diego State kid starts, because they've got Chris Carson from last year, who showed a lot of promise before breaking his leg. And yeah, he was a great runner out of Oklahoma State, but is he going to be healthy? Is he as good as we thought he was, or was it just a small sample size, kind of like Thomas Rawls? I don't know.
I don't think you draft a running back in the first round unless they're going to be your every down back.
I really hope not, but...
Like, it was just a couple years ago that we were like, yeah, running backs will never be drafted in the first round again.
Right.
Now we've seen the Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott. You've seen some of these guys that were drafted in the first round break out. Leonard Fournette from last year. But
and that I had to happen after guys like Le'Veon Bell were drafted in the second round, and people were like, shoot, we still need a running back.
Yeah. David Johnson, the Cardinals running back, that was like a sixth round pick or whatever. Like,
wasn't even supposed to be a starter.
Find running backs anywhere in the draft. But to draft somebody in the first round that very realistically could have been there in the second or third rounds, just an enormous game plan for this guy. And so he's got to be their dude. So I'm interested in seeing how they use him.
I think we all are, but luckily football is right around the corner. But before we can get to football, we got to get through basketball. So let's talk some Eastern and Western Conference finals. You've got one series that looks like it's competitive. Neither game's been competitive at all because you've got game one taken handily by Golden State, and you've got game two taken handily by Houston. In the West, who do you see coming out of this series alive? Is this going to go the distance? Is Golden State going to turn it up a notch and not play so sloppy? Is Houston going to find a way to stay competitive and maybe pull out the win? It's weird that they seem like the underdog, even though they're the favorite with the better regular season record and home court advantage. Who do you like after two games?
I still think it's the Warriors series to lose. In basketball, in the seven-game series, you always say that start until the road team wins a game. And so, conference finals, I'm telling people, wait a minute. They're going back to Cleveland. Boston tied 2-2. It's a whole different story. Where the Warriors already took a game in Houston, so now the Warriors have home court advantage. Games, two of those are going to be played in Golden State, and so I think the Warriors are the favorite in the West. they have been since the start of the season, and they will be until I see them eliminated. Right. And I think the Warriors are the best constructed team in the NBA. I think they are an all-star team that they roll out every night, and I just think they're the better team. The Rockets played a really good game in Game 2. But the Rockets had to play that really good game in Game 2, or else they were facing being swept, because Oracle is a tough building to play in. And so the Rockets are holding tight, and they're playing like the team. They played the Game 2 like they were the team that with the best record in the NBA this year, which they were. And so I think going into Game 3, I think we're going to see the Warriors play the Warriors game on their home court. And I think people are going to start to realize that this series might not be as close as a 1-1 series tie after two games appears to be. But I think the Eastern Conference Finals is kind of in the same boat. Cleveland has to win Game 3 in Cleveland, or else they're done. But I'm never going to count LeBron James out. They're going back home to Cleveland. I wouldn't be shocked if this series is 2-2 by the end of next week, and we're going to Game 5 in Boston with the series tied. So I'm excited for how both of them are going to play out. I just want a game that's close to the end.
Right.
Like,
we haven't seen that in either series yet.
No, I mean, the first game in the Eastern Conference Final was a 25-point game. The second game was 13. In the Western Conference, it was 13, and then it was 22. I want to see a game that comes down to a final shot. That's what made that Cleveland series in the second round so exciting with the Raptors, was there were games that came down to the last shot. LeBron James with that floater off the backboard to win the game, and There were a couple games that came down to one shot.
You had overtime in Game 1. You had Game 3 where he came down to the last shot. And that was after that Indianapolis series where it was every game was down to the wire.
Yeah, and now we're watching – we've watched four conference final games so far, and not one of them's been closer than 13 points. And so the next few games that we do see some of that.
Do they not have enough film on each other? Is that the problem?
You would hope so, because these teams have been planning on this since the beginning of the season. But the way that the schedule lays out right now is awesome, though, because Celtics and Cavaliers play Saturday, then Rockets Warriors play Sunday. There's a game every day for a sweep or an early season.
Right.
Or an early exit, but there's a game Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, if both series were to go seven.
So basically between now and Memorial Day weekend, we've got a conference finals game.
There's a basketball game That's every awesome. Night. Yep.
As long as these teams figure each other out, so, which if they don't, shame on them. They better have the film. If they don't, get them the freaking film.
Well, and that's the thing. I think LeBron James is... We were going to get into this argument tonight, but we're already going way over time. But I argue that LeBron James is the best player to ever play basketball. And I am not counting him out against a Celtics team, which is largely 20-year-olds, and Al Horford. Like, I think that LeBron will figure it out, and I think I wouldn't be shocked if the Cavaliers come back from down 2-0 to win the series. And so I think that series has the chance of being more competitive than the Western Conference series, which I still think the Warriors win it in 5 or 6 games. Just they're the better team. I think they have the better coaching. They're superior to the Rockets, where I think the Eastern Conference is a better suited matchup. But I also said that the Blazers were going to beat the Pelicans, so what do I know?
Well, I would argue that Bonzi Wells is the best player of all time. I don't know what has to do with this subject, but somehow that means the Cavs will probably win this one. I don't know how it's going to happen. because LeBron's played two really good games. He hasn't had an all-time game yet. I mean, game two, he was close, but, you know, the stats looked better, I think, than his actual performance did. But he has got to figure out how to get his guys involved, because they look like they're not even interested in this series, and it's kind of pathetic, because that was kind of the reason they beat Toronto so handily, is because you had guys like Korver and Love who just came alive in that series, and everyone was talking about how they're going to get them more involved, and they're going to figure this out. They're always going to be in motion. And instead, we've seen the LeBron and Tristan Thompson show, and it, by the way, doesn't work. It's never worked. It's never going to work. Those two are not a championship duo. We all know LeBron loves Tristan Thompson, but he loves that he's a guy that just sits down there and just eats boards. He eats people alive under the glass, but that only matters if you've got shooters on the floor. And short of everybody on the floor having a good night, I don't see this team winning in seven games. I'm struggling to see them be competitive, and I hope that they wake up and they all get, you know, some nice cryo freeze on their legs over the next couple of days. And LeBron comes out looking like a 25-year-old, which is what he did in game three of the finals last year. Didn't work, but, you know, they won a game, which was really neat. I hope they win a couple games in this series. But I'm just – he looks tired. And his teammates look like they're not as interested as he is. And that's sad, because this could be LeBron's last couple of rides. We don't know how many years he has left. He looks more tired every postseason.
Yeah, and that – I agree, and they've got to step up on the other side of that matchup. The Celtics are missing their best two players.
Right.
There's nothing on LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, the Eastern Conference is in a good spot. Like, I just talked about earlier how good the Western Conference is. The Eastern Conference is going to see some shakeup. I think the Raptors are going to a little bit after firing Dwayne Casey, but Philadelphia is going to be better next year because they're developing. Ben Simmons was a rookie this year, but I think the Celtics, where do they fit Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward coming back? Bench. Like, I think there's going to be some shakeup there on the roster, but the Celtics are in a really good spot moving forward with this roster that they've got.
They've almost got too much talent. They can afford to probably trade one of those pieces and get something even better in return.
Yep, I would fully agree with that.
I mean, when you look at it and you've got your extra pieces are named Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, that's a good problem.
Yep.
And I think you keep both of those guys and maybe you trade Hayward – Portland would die for the chance to get Gordon Hayward. I mean, we would trade a first-round pick for him easily. They would trade number 24 in a heartbeat for him, maybe a Mo Harkless or somebody like that, somebody that's a utility player that you can get something for. I think Boston should really think about that because they've probably got too many guys for their rotation to physically handle after this season.
I would say that the Blazers would trade a first-round pick and a developing asset like Zach Collins. As good as Zach Collins looked, right, and as good as I think Zach Collins will be, with what Neil O'Shea said today about getting players that are ready for the playoffs, getting players that are ready to help in April, Collins will be that for another couple of years. They say on a big guy it takes 5 seasons. Well, he's got one down. They're not going to wait for 4 more. I wouldn't be shocked if the Blazers, if Gordon Hayward were to hit the market, which we're just obviously throwing out hypotheticals, but if he were to hit the market, the Blazers would have to give up anything that they could to get him, short of CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard.
Right.
But putting Hayward at the 3 next to CJ and Dame, with Nurkic down low and Aminu at the 4, or whoever you put at the 4, that's a heck of a lineup. And I think that pushes you a few more wins during the regular season, but I also think it makes you more prepared for the postseason.
And you're deeper coming off your bench. You can now bring a guy like Harkless or Turner off the bench, which is probably where they really belong. And you've already got Aminu, you've got Nurkic, you know, maybe you keep Collins and you trade somebody else, and you're so deep at that point. And now you've got, you know, what you could count on as maybe another Klay Thompson in your lineup versus a team like Golden State, and you've got the extra firepower to now go the distance with anybody in the West.
Yeah, I agree. I hadn't really given a whole ton of thought about Gordon Hayward in Portland, but that could be an option for the Blazers if he were to hit the market, if the Celtics realize how ridiculous a wealth of riches they have.
They've got too many wings. They got to get rid of one of them, and I would hope that if they do, Hayward's the guy, because I would rather have him than one of their younger players, because we've got enough youth. We need some veteran talent right now.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, that's the 45-minute mark, so we are officially out of time. But, Garrett, thank you so much for being on. It's a pleasure to have you back, man, and we'll definitely do it again before the next NFL draft, I promise. And thanks again for spending your evening here with us. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Garrett Thornton. Thanks for checking us out. We'll see you next time. Good night, stay tuned, and stay classy, Portland.